Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
So I'll be presenting on an outbreak of measles that occurred in New York City last year. And New York City hasn't seen any cases associated with a Disney outbreak. We have had two cases this year so far that were associated with importation from Azerbaijan. So measles is a viral illness characterized by maculopapular rash and high fever with cough, coryza, or conjunctivitis. Complications include diarrhea, otitis media, pneumonia, miscarriage, preterm labor, seizures, and rarely encephalitis. Subacute sclerosing panencephalitis, which can occur years after measles infection, has been reported in 5 to 10 cases per million reported cases of measles. And approximately 2 to 3 deaths occur for every 1,000 reported measles cases. Measles is highly infectious via airborne and droplet transmission, and the time during which susceptible contacts may develop measles is 7 to 21 days after they're exposed, but with an average of 10 to 14 days. And cases are infectious 4 days before through 4 days after rash onset. Measles is a live virus vaccine administered as part of a combination vaccine with mumps and rubella. The first dose is recommended to be administered at age 12 to 15 months, with a second dose at age 4 to 6 years. And the median effectiveness of two doses is around 97%. This graph shows the number of measles cases in thousands reported in the U.S. from 1950 through 2011. Before vaccine licensure, an average of 500,000 cases and 500 deaths were reported annually, though annual case count is estimated to have been 3 to 4 million. Measles vaccine was introduced in 1963, after which incidence decreased by 98%. And the second routine dose of MMR was recommended in 1989, and measles elimination was declared in 2000. But since then, the majority of measles cases are now imported from other countries where measles remains endemic, which can lead to outbreaks in the U.S. So this graph that was just shown is the number of cases in the U.S. from 2001 through 2015, and you can see that the number of cases has increased in recent years, and as stated, the over 600 cases from 27 states were reported in 2014, which represents the largest number of cases since elimination was declared, and the majority of those people who got measles were unvaccinated. So in 2014, the New York City Health Department confirmed a total of 25 outbreak cases in New York City residents with rash onsets from February 5th through April 11th. Cases during this outbreak were defined as persons with clinically compatible illness and either lab confirmation or EpiLink to a confirmed case, and a resident of New York City with rash onset from February 5th through 2 incubation periods after the onset of the last case. We were notified by CDC quarantine on February 9th of a confirmed measles case in a Texas resident who flew from Dallas to New York City while infectious. The Texas case and the first New York City case were in the same airport during their incubation period, where they both likely acquired measles. And there were also two additional measles cases in U.S. residents who traveled through the same airport terminal on the same day during their incubation period. This figure shows the number of outbreak cases among New York City residents by date of rash onset. The Texas case went to an urgent care facility while symptomatic, but measles diagnosis was not considered and testing was not performed. He was diagnosed with measles only after returning to his home state, which notified us on February 10th. He visited multiple settings where people were exposed to measles, including healthcare facilities, restaurants and bars, a hotel, and a large conference center. We identified 3 secondary cases in New York City residents who were exposed to the Texas case. One case attended a class across the street from the Texas case's hotel in Midtown, and 2 others were exposed in the urgent care facility. When some of the outbreak cases presented for care, providers did not consider measles diagnosis. 5 cases did not have all the classic symptoms of measles, and there were 10 cases where either providers did not suspect measles or did not report measles to the health department within 24 hours. In addition, multiple cases were triaged but kept in ER waiting rooms for varying lengths of time and before being placed on airborne isolation. So the lack of suspicion of measles diagnosis and the delays in appropriate isolation and reporting contributed to the several exposures that occurred all over Manhattan. This map shows the location of residence of cases and exposures. In the center of the map is Manhattan, with the Bronx on the top right and Queens and Brooklyn on the bottom right and New Jersey on the left. The yellow dots represent the location of settings that cases attended while infectious, and you can see that the exposures occurred all over Manhattan. The blue stars represent the areas where transmission of measles likely occurred, and the neighborhoods where cases lived are circled in red. Initially, cases and transmission were clustered in Midtown, but later the outbreak focused in Upper Manhattan. 76% of cases resided in or visited Upper Manhattan during their incubation period, and spread to this area was likely due to the child I mentioned who lives in Upper Manhattan and attended a class across the street from the Texas Cases Hotel in Midtown. This table shows the setting of measles transmission for cases in this outbreak. The Texas Cases visit to the urgent care facility resulted in transmission to two other patients, and then one of these patients spread measles to another resident in their apartment building, representing tertiary spread. And we're typically able to identify the exact setting of transmission, but 76% of the cases acquired measles in community settings where we were not able to identify the exact source. This graph shows the age distribution of cases. Cases ranged in age from 0 to 63 years with a median of 22 years. And what's unusual about this outbreak is that a majority of the cases were adults. This table shows the immunization status of cases in adults versus children. 72% of cases had zero doses of MMR or unknown immunization history at the time of their exposure. Among the adults, 9 had unknown status, and 5 were fully vaccinated with 2 documented MMRs. And none of the cases in children were fully vaccinated prior to their exposure. Of the 8 children with no documented vaccination, 4 were too young to have received vaccine, 2 were still within the interval for their first MMR, and 2 were siblings, one of whom was homeschooled and was not subject to the school entry vaccination requirements, and the other had a religious exemption to vaccine in their school. Complications of measles during this outbreak included one adult with pancytopenia and hepatitis, and there were 7 hospitalizations and no deaths. All outbreak cases were confirmed by either a positive IgM or a positive PCR. Of the 19 cases with PCR testing, 18 were PCR positive, and all 25 cases had serologic testing, and 16 were positive. And genotype B3 was identified in 16 cases, which was consistent with the genotype circulating during the outbreak in the Philippines. 6 cases were IgM negative and IgG positive. Usually a negative IgM and a positive IgG would suggest that someone is immune and not infected. However, all these cases were PCR positive, which confirmed the diagnosis. And these cases were all in adults with 2 MMRs or an unknown immunization history. And one had serology taken 7 days after rash onset and still remained IgM negative. So PCR was critical in identifying cases that may have otherwise been missed based on serological testing alone. To further explore the immune response in cases, we did additional investigation on those with 2 MMRs or an unknown vaccination history. Avidity testing measures the maturity of IgG and helps to determine if measles cases with unknown vaccination status had evidence of receiving vaccine, and if persons with documentation of vaccine had primary or secondary vaccine failure. Low avidity would suggest primary vaccine failure, which is the lack of immune response to vaccine, while high avidity suggests secondary vaccine failure, which happens when a person responds to vaccine but there was waning antibody. This table shows cases tested for avidity by vaccination status for cases with two or an unknown number of MMRs. Avidity testing was performed on 13 cases who were IgG positive. Of the five cases with two MMRs, four had high avidity, suggesting secondary vaccine failure, while one had low avidity, suggesting primary vaccine failure. Of the eight cases with an unknown vaccination history, seven had high avidity, suggesting that they had prior immune response to measles with subsequent waning antibody. Because of the heightened awareness of the outbreak and extensive media coverage, a large number of suspected cases were reported to the health department during the outbreak period. This graph shows the number of cases reported to the health department in 2014. From February through June, we investigated over 400 suspected cases of measles compared to the usually 100 to 200 cases per year investigated. To assist in the huge amount of case and contact investigations, the city's incident command system was activated, and during this outbreak, there was a simultaneous mumps outbreak going on among college students in the city, which increased the demand on staff resources. In addition, the health department identified over 1,700 contacts who were exposed to measles. Home isolation or post-exposure prophylaxis was recommended for potentially susceptible contacts. 32 contacts receive immune globulin, and 54 receive MMR within the appropriate time frame after exposure. Other outbreak control measures included multiple alerts that were sent to providers citywide, and weekly calls conducted with hospitals to provide updates and infection control guidance. Unvaccinated patients presenting for care to facilities in the most affected zip codes were recalled to receive MMR vaccine, and an early dose of MMR was recommended for those under 4 years of age as long as 28 days had passed since the last live vaccine. And these are some posters that we developed and distributed to healthcare facilities during the outbreak. These, as well as other clinical resources for providers, are on our website. So why did this outbreak occur? Measles diagnosis was sometimes missed when patients presented for care with no travel history or prior vaccination or non-classic appearance, and other diagnoses were considered, such as Kawasaki disease. And when measles was considered as a possible diagnosis, cases were not always reported to the health department within 24 hours. They were not placed in negative pressure isolation, or the appropriate tests were not ordered. And this led to several healthcare exposures, in addition to the numerous other sites that cases visited throughout the city. So in summary, the timely isolation and reporting of suspected cases to the health department is essential for outbreak control. And this outbreak also highlighted the importance of timely PCR testing for measles diagnosis. Without PCR, the negative IgM results and positive IgG titers, in addition to the vaccination status of cases, may have caused the misclassification of many cases. And lastly, it was likely that the high population level immunity in New York City likely prevented a much larger outbreak. So I'd like to acknowledge all those in the Bureau of Immunization and other bureaus and the state and CDC that aided in the investigation. And I'd be happy to take any questions.
Virginia, and I was wondering, it sounded like you had a lot of contact and communication with some of your hospitals and healthcare facilities. Did you have to make any recommendations for exclusion for healthcare workers who may not have been up to date on their vaccinations, and how was that received, and how did some of those different healthcare facilities maintain some of that information?
We made the same recommendations for, in general, for everyone. I don't know specifically if there were healthcare workers that were excluded, focused on them. But for people who didn't have, who weren't able to provide us with evidence of immunity, we recommended that they be excluded from certain settings, that they stay home.
All right, part of that, Albanese from Colorado. I think it was a good presentation. Just curious, you had the 1,700 contacts over the course of the outbreak and relatively limited use of PEP, whether it be IG or MMR. So was that in part because a lot of the contacts were in fact immune, so you had two doses of MMR, and did you check for immunity in them, or was it that it was just too late to institute PEP?
Right, a lot of them weren't eligible for post-exposure prophylaxis, and many of the contacts we weren't made aware of until well after the 3 days or the 6 days had passed. So we worked with hospitals to try to get people who were eligible for IG to get them that medication as soon as possible.
Jessica from Georgia, how did you go about contacting the 1,700 people? Did you do by phone? Did you mail letters? Or
It was mostly by phone. That's why we had so many people assisting us. We actually tried to call all of the contacts that we were made aware of. And if we weren't able to get a phone number on them, we sent letters to them to notify them, to ask them to call the health department. There was one school that there may have been some exposure, but so that we didn't call every single student in the school. The school helped us to identify who would have been susceptible to measles.
Okay.